Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Fred Bueller from Chase Building Team and Ellen Clark, Vice President of Heidi's Village. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Thank you.
Fred, tell us a little bit to set up this conversation about Chase Building Team. What kind of work do you do and how are you serving folks here in the Valley?
Yeah, Chase Building Team is a commercial general contractor, Arizona-based, Arizona-focused. We've got offices in the greater Phoenix and then one office, a smaller one down in Tucson. So we focus strictly in Arizona, don't look to leave this state, and we work on commercial projects. So that ranges from education projects, working with K-12 school districts, retail projects, other commercial projects, multifamily, and nonprofit.
Marvelous. We're going to learn more about some of the details and about your own experience, how you got into this. But Ellen, tell us about Heidi's Village. What is that?
Sure. Heidi's Village is a shelter for cats and dogs that we're building in Phoenix. And I think we all probably remember when we were little kids, the first time that we walked into a shelter looking for a puppy or kitten, and you'd have to like hold your nose and run through the building, see if you saw something. And gone are those days, because animal shelters these days are beautiful. They are beautiful places to visit. They're lively, they're active, they're positive environments for animals. And that's exactly what we're creating, a positive environment for homeless animals.
And Chase Building Team is doing this construction on your new site.
They are, and it's been a great opportunity to work with them. I know they work with a lot of other nonprofits in Phoenix, and they really understand how to go a long way with what your budget is.
That's marvelous. I want to get into some of the details about Heidi's Village and about how that project is going to unfold. Fred, how did you get started in the building industry? What's your backstory?
It's something I grew up in. My dad has had a residential construction company back in St. Louis where I grew up, just recently retired and wound down his business. But he had that for 32 years, so it was something I grew up around, always visiting job sites, visiting his projects. But on top of that, my parents always had a project going on in the house. So it's something you just grow up around. You're passionate. You get excited when you walk in a newly framed construction project. You can smell the wood being going up, drywall going in. It's just something that was part of me since I was an early child. And on top of that, growing up and building Legos, it's hard to, I would build villages on top of our ping pong table. And it was just something I enjoyed doing, is seeing something come to life and putting things together. And ultimately, I decided to come to Arizona State University to get out of Missouri it was going to be a 4 or 5 year stint, thinking I'd come out here, take civil engineering, ultimately go back and work with my dad. But I'll be honest, it was a little too hard to leave Scottsdale, Arizona and leave this great state of ours. So stayed here and planted my roots with my family now here.
Ellen, are you from Arizona or did you relocate?
I'm not. I relocated from Wisconsin. And for many of the same reasons, it's so beautiful here.
You know, same here. I mean, I came from California. It's funny, the more business owners, business leaders that we interview in here, the more I realize that there is a lot of different things that bring people to Arizona. Obviously, some people are born here and I get a unique perspective on this state I now call home from them. But, you know, it's the same with us. It's something kind of random. I didn't come for university 6 years ago. My wife and I moved here to house sit for 4 months. And we're still here. We moved out of that house, but we're still here. I'm fascinated by this childhood experience with Legos. I have two small boys, and they're building things all the time. At what age did you kind of start to think that maybe this was something more than just toys, that you would actually follow in your dad's footsteps? Was it something you always thought you would do? Or was there a moment of like, I'm never doing that? And then you're like, well, no, maybe I will.
I think there was many years I thought I'd never do what my dad did. You kind of want to do something different, but then at the same time, everything was pulling me towards that direction of construction. So it was hard to get away from it. So it was probably towards the end of high school that I realized I do want to be in construction. It's a great career. It's a great opportunity. It was a family business. A lot of my family had been in different trades, from painters to woodworkers. So it was something I think that was just innate in me. And then going to college at Arizona State University, I ultimately did 5 internships, a few with general contractors. And even at that point, I was like, I'm not sure this is what I want to do. Worked for engineers, worked for residential home builders, worked for developers. So I had a broad sense of kind of a broad opportunity to see a lot of different things, and ultimately landed with Chase Building Team. And it's been a great opportunity.
Now, tell us a little bit about the company itself. How did Chase Building Team get started? And what's been some of the path that it has followed to where we are today?
Well, in 2007, Barry Chase was working for a large general contractor. He was running an office here locally, their Phoenix office. If we all remember, that was the heyday of construction. Everything was booming. There was more than enough work to go around. And I think the work-life balance of everybody was getting a little off tilt. It was getting a little crazy. And Barry decided at that time, at the peak, August of 2007, that he said he wanted to start a new company. His own company, kind of catered to the clients and owners and architects. He had a sense that people were starting to get away from that. And if he had an opportunity to work and truly focus on the owner's needs, that he could create something great. He wanted to be a small company. Fortunately, he did not have a crystal ball, because he didn't realize that in 2 months the market was going to crash.
Right. He didn't know it was a peak.
No.
It just seemed like it was good.
It was great. And if he wanted to do a $20, $50 million company, it would be easy. But as luck would have it, about 3 months later, everything crashed. We all remember the worst recession. But fortunately for us, at that time, we were small, we were very nimble, and we were really able to navigate out of that market.
And how did that happen? Were you there? When did you join the company?
I joined that first year with him.
Okay.
So we were about 15 employees, doing about $18 million in 2008. But we stayed nimble, we stayed lean, we stayed really small for those first 4 or 5 years as we navigated through the market. Because prior to that, no one was chasing, all these large general contractors weren't chasing these small projects. And then right when Chase Building Team got started, all of a sudden, everyone was chasing after the same project. So it became pretty intense. But we had the opportunity where we were lean and able to pursue and create something for our clients that everyone was looking for. And Barry had a great reputation within Arizona, within our industry. So he was a great leader. And I think he brought a lot of clientele over to him.
Obviously, in an industry like this, your expertise in executing projects is, and the kind of portfolio that you can show folks is a big part of your reputation, but relationships are probably even more important. Talk about how relationships are managed and how Chase Building Team has positioned itself by keeping those connections as an important part of not only how you do business, but how you do good in the community.
Yeah, relationships are key. We look at every project that we go into as we're basically entering a long-term relationship with our clients. You know, most projects are 6, 12, 18 months. So you're basically entering into a marriage with them. So we want to make sure that it's an enjoyable process for them. Depending on the type of project, it can be cumbersome to the site. It can be very busy for our clientele and for our architects. So we want to make sure that when we start a project, that it's going to be a great process for them and the end user. So we really focus on 3 things. Passion. If we walk into every project and we're passionate about, you'll see Ellen, when she talks about Heidi's Village, how passionate they are about that. We have to bring the same passion, because we want to make sure at the end of the day, they're extremely happy. Partnership. You know, the construction industry in the architectural world has changed drastically from 20 years ago, when it was more of a push-pull, combative environment. Now it is a partnership between the owner, the architect, and general contractor. So we have to make sure that we are partnering with the entire team, because again, it's a long-term relationship. And then lastly was reputation, which kind of goes on to that original question you had. You know, we have to have a great reputation in our industry, because every sector we're in, it is a very small industry, and our reputation is everything. So make it a great process for our owners and clients, be passionate about it, have fun, and turn over a great product to our end user.
And you serve a lot of different types of clients in a handful of specific niches, the public projects you do, government projects, the nonprofit, the private sector, education, communities of faith. Talk a little bit about some of the projects that really stand out for you as really a paradigmatic, that's a big word, paradigmatic example of what Chase really does best.
Yeah, so we work in the nonprofit, which is, we'll talk a little bit about Heidi's in a bit, but we've worked on Upward Foundation, which is in Uptown Phoenix. We worked with ICANN, which is improving Chandler area neighborhoods, and then Boys and Girls Clubs. Down the street from this radio station, we actually did the Bob Parsons Foundation, their Boys and Girls Club facility, just a few miles down the road. Barry Chase has sat on the board with Boys and Girls Club. So community and being involved with nonprofits is one arm of our our company. Additionally, we work in the education. So we do a lot of K-12 projects. So we've worked with Madison Elementary School District, which is not too far from here, Scottsdale Unified, and we're building a brand new high school out on the west side with Tolleson Union right now. And then additionally, retail. But retail has been a little bit slower. Obviously, it's taken a lot longer for a rebound as the retail market is changing. E-commerce is making a push. So the dynamics of that has changed pretty drastically. There aren't those big boxes anymore like Tempe Marketplace and Desert Ridge. But one great example is Town & Country. Town & Country at 20th Street and Camelback. It was an old facility, old retail center that was built in the 50s and had continuously been remodeled. We've been on that project since 2012. And we're about to start probably our seventh phase of that. So they've done a tremendous job of bringing that up to current times and what the end users are all looking for.
You know, the landscape of construction of various types in the Valley is something that, as an outsider who also doesn't know a lot about the specifics of the industry, has struck me as unique. There's such an interesting mix of new building projects, adaptive reuse projects, infill, all these things I'm starting to learn are relevant, is and kind of the way our communities are growing together, both geographically as their boundaries kind of begin to grow towards each other, but also grow up together in the sense that there's cities, smaller cities around the Valley that are discovering their own unique identities and not just being dominated by Phoenix and Scottsdale and, you know, the biggies. And it's a unique landscape in many ways. How do you approach the design and the construction of these projects? Obviously, you work with partners like architects and with the client, the end user, but how does the process play out and what's the unique kind of perspective or DNA that Chase is bringing to each project?
When we work with owners, architects, subcontractors is a critical component of it. You know, working with our subs is key. You mentioned infill projects. Infill projects have become much more prevalent in the last 10 years, especially as millennials have come up. Everyone wants things downtown and urban areas where they don't have to drive far, they can walk places. So working on those types of projects are drastically different than working on out in the farm fields out in Queen Creek as that town was being developed. But there's a tremendous amount of infill projects that are happening. We built the Crescent Highlands Community Project over there at 16th Street in Highland, and you're building basically on postage stamps. So a lot of our projects have changed where you have to approach it differently from staging and laydown area and working with subcontractors that know how to work in tight, confined spaces. But ultimately, that's kind of where all of our market has shifted towards the last 10 years to this infill and, as you mentioned, adaptive reuse.
Ellen Clark, Vice President of Heidi's Village. Talk to us about the Heidi's Village project. I mean, it's not only one of the many in the Chase Building Team's portfolio, but it's got a very special mission and history as well. What can you tell us about Heidi's Village? Who's Heidi and what's the village concept all about?
Sure. Virginia B. Jaundice, also known as Ginny, is a philanthropist in Phoenix. She is incredibly generous to nonprofit causes like homelessness, children's issues, animal welfare, and she had a dream of creating an environment that would be kind of a stopping point for homeless animals on their way to a long life. And she was in the real estate business. She met a woman who was selling her house who had a dog by the name of Heidi. Heidi was a schnauzer, beautiful little dog. And Heidi's owner became ill, needed to sell her house. And Ginny basically developed a very close friendship with Heidi's former owner. And when she passed away, she asked Ginny if she would keep her and take Heidi. And Ginny took Heidi, and the dog made such an impact on her that the creation of Heidi's Village, a true village for animals, came to be. We're going to be located. We just broke ground last month, and it is on 5 acres of land. It has 24 different little dog parks for dogs to run around. We're going to have a bone-shaped pool. We even have outdoor spaces for cats, contained outdoor spaces, but spaces for cats to play and enjoy while either they're recuperating or until they're able to find a forever home.
I'll say Ellen and Ginny did not spare any details on this, and it's going to be a tremendous facility, not just for the dogs and cats, but additionally for the community. You know, it's going to be, they didn't miss any details for the exteriors, but as well for the dogs. Everything that they built and designed was around the dogs and cats for their comfort level, to make sure that they have the best place to be until they're adopted. But additionally, from the exterior, when you're driving by this, it's going to be a jewel of the community. So they did not spare any details, and I think it's going to be probably the best animal shelter in the state of Arizona, if not one of the top across the nation.
And again, like I said earlier, when you think of animal shelters, you kind of get a little sad when you're thinking when you were younger and they were always kind of dingy and dark and concrete and industrial colors and echoing and stinky. And it's not at all that way anymore.
Where's the location?
It is on 40th Street and Van Buren.
And what are some of the other unique features of Heidi's Village? In addition to the bone-shaped pools and some of the other little touches, which the dogs may or may not realize are for them, but they'll love the pool, I have no doubt about that. What is it that makes this different?
Sure. One thing, and it's a big thing, that makes it different is we want to collaborate with a lot of organizations in the animal welfare community in Phoenix and the surrounding area to provide temporary shelter for animals that they either currently have or that they could take in if they had room. And many of the animals may very well come through Maricopa Animal Care and Control or as a stray on the street. And we'll hold them temporarily for one of 100 rescue groups in the community, provide medical intervention at subsidized rates for the medical and housing.
So this is really not just serving individual members of the general public. You're also creating a network of relationships with other animal rescue organizations as well. What will you offer them? What, aside from additional space and services, how has this helped their work as well? Because in a way, it's almost like, and again, I don't know, it seems like maybe the folks trying to do good and help animals in trouble, are they isolated from each other in some way, trying in their own area to carry out their work, or is there something that brings them together?
I think there are different organizations that bring them together. There are many animal rescue groups that specialize in certain breeds or specialize in behaviorally challenged animals or are just somehow specialized. The common thread is that there are many animals that need help in our community, and we'd like to try and help them all, but sometimes you just don't have the space. You have a network of foster families available, but when they get filled or when one of the animals in that foster becomes sick, then they're not available for a period of time. And what makes Heidi's Village incredibly unique is that we have 6 buildings for dogs and 2 buildings for cats. And each of the different wards in those buildings, again, have their own little play yard, but they can be, those animals can be contained in that area. And if one breaks out with kennel cough, it's not the entire population of animals that are going to be affected, but just that isolated small ward. So, for example, we're never going to keep more than between 10 and 12 animals in any particular ward, in any dog ward. And so that contains it. This time of year, what's very common in shelters is a breakout of parvo or kennel cough or upper respiratory infection. And when you have a very small number of animals housed together, then the instance of passing the illness on is much more limited.
There's a history that many people probably don't realize about the progressive movement to take better care of animals, the animal rights movement, if you will, and its relationship with similar initiatives to take better care of humans and human rights. Most people don't know that the publication of Black Beauty, which was focused on horses and abusive treatment of horses, was one of the things that helped to spur Quakers and others to take more direct action against slavery and against unequal treatment of other human beings as well. And I'm just fascinated by the way in which some of these threads in our shared history seem to come together. How did you, Ellen, find your way to this particular cause? How did you come to be connected with Heidi's Village? And what's your backstory about, when did animals and people become important to you?
I have, for the past 30 years, been involved in nonprofit management. My background, I started in the arts. I'm an art history major. My parents were very worried about me. What are you going to do with that? What can you possibly do with that? And I started in the visual and performing arts in management. And when I heard about an organization in Milwaukee called the Wisconsin Humane Society, it was a brand new facility. It was beautiful. It had just opened. I went and visited, and I was just absolutely amazed. That was my introduction to animal welfare and how it is not the way it used to be. It is a thriving environment for cats and dogs, and you're successful every time an animal leaves the building. You've found a forever match. And when I moved to Phoenix about 13 years ago, I still remained in animal welfare at an organization called Alter Tails, which is a spay-neuter clinic. About 3 years ago, my wife graduated from medical school, and we were going to have to move out of state. So I left my position at Altered Tales, and lo and behold, she got a residency here in Phoenix, in Scottsdale. So I maintained my residency here, and I got a call one day from a woman named Ginny, who got my name from someone else in animal welfare and found out that I was available to help create this organization. And it's been a great ride ever since. It's been wonderful. Ginny is beyond generous. I mean, she wants the best for animals in our community, and she is the typical put your money where your mouth is, and that's exactly what she has done. She has created a facility that I think will match none other in terms of creating an environment that will where animals will thrive.
She is certainly going above and beyond. It's going to be an impressive facility when it's all completed.
Well, it's fascinating to me that even though the nonprofit world that you come from, Ellen, and the construction world that you come from, Fred, are very different, both in terms of their scope and their you know, the scale of the projects and all that, that something you both have said strikes me as being very much the same. And that is that within small networks of professionals, it's the word of mouth that drives the business or drives the connections that lead you to new opportunities. You know, Ginny, having heard from someone about your history of nonprofit expertise, your passion for animals, and the way in which Chase Building Teams projects, you know, are either repeat clients or word of mouth, somebody leaving an organization, going to another organization. These aren't the common things most people would think drive the success of a business or of a nonprofit organization, but relationships really are crucial to this. As you look forward, Ellen, to the future of Heidi's Village, obviously there is a lot in the building of the facility itself that is occupying your time. But tell me a little bit about your active and forward-looking relationship building. How are you working on that side of this new facility?
Sure. We're always looking to build relationships with other animal welfare organizations. The Arizona Humane Society, for example, Dr. Steve Hansen is the executive director there. And when we were, when all of this was a germ of an idea, I spoke with Dr. Hansen about what he felt were some of the strongest needs in the community. And kittens, neonate kittens, kept coming up. And in spring through summer and early fall, there are literally thousands of little kittens that are born in this community. And through either the death of the mom or people unknowingly taking those kittens from the mother, they are orphaned. And they're sometimes a day old, a week old. They cannot fend for themselves. And it is a huge need. So one of the programs at Heidi's Village is a neonate kitten nursery. Kittens that are up to 3 weeks of age need to be fed every 2 to 4 hours, straight through the night. So our neonate kitten center during kitten season will be running 24/7. In addition, many people in our community have a deep, strong love for their animal, but can't always afford the proper vet care. We plan to have a vet clinic that will serve the needs of people who can't afford the full vet bill, maybe can afford a few dollars, make contributions on their appointment or on their vet services, or maybe can't afford anything at all. We intend to, we're a nonprofit organization, we accept donations, we intend to try and help people with their animals' veterinary care. In addition, there are animals that cannot find a home because they may have some behavioral issues, whether it's they're shy, they're shut down, they're scared. We do not intend to have a time limit on animals in terms of we have to get this dog out by X day or we'll euthanize. We want to use behavioral intervention as a means to providing that animal's ability to walk out the front door. We'll have behavioral classes. We'll have a grooming facility. We will do adoptions, but we're not going to be a high-volume adoption center. We want to give animals the time they need to recuperate from illnesses and to form a solid behavioral environment.
There are a number of animal rescue animal welfare type organizations in the Valley that we have visited just as a family, because again, two small boys, four and a half and almost seven. Sorry, Kieran. And, you know, Liberty Wildlife, for example, just below the Salt River does really important work with raptors and wild birds. The Arizona Herpetological Society, which is a private facility that focuses on reptiles, and they've got lots of snakes and lots of other things. And of course, I'm aware of many other smaller organizations that deal with domesticated animals. But it's fascinating to me that there is a landscape of animal welfare organizations here in the Valley. What kind of community-facing programs are you going to have? Will there be opportunities for people to come to your site, or is it more of a private treatment and housing facility? What sorts of outreach do you envision? How does the community play a role in Heidi's Village?
Sure. There is an organization in town called PAC 911, and they are an organization made up of over 100 other animal welfare organizations. The largest organizations in town are members like Arizona Humane Society, Arizona Animal Welfare League, HALO, Altered Tales, just a wide variety of organizations. But the most numerous number or members are the small rescue organizations throughout Maricopa County. Those organizations meet on an annual basis. Many do adoptions at some of these events. And while we won't be having them do adoptions on our site, we do host regular annual meetings for them once our facility is built. Our facility will be one that's open to the public. For services, for volunteering, for veterinary needs. We just want people to come in and again see that your average shelter these days is much different than long ago.
I remember as a kid when my sister and I wanted a dog and my parents said we should look at a rescue, and we ended up not going that route. But yes, I remember very much the pound. I don't even know if it was an actual, that what it was or not, but that was the word that was just thrown around, and it was a horrible place. More akin to, some of like a third world prison than, you know, something that you would want any living thing to be in. So I'm inspired and excited by the project that you're talking about. And I'm also struck by the fact that there are unique features of this build that, really must pose some interesting challenges. Fred Bueller from Chase Building Team, every site is different and yet some things are the same. Is this the first project of this kind that Chase has done? And have you had to learn anything specific about animal care in order to execute on this one?
This is the first kind for us, yes. And it's definitely a unique project. You've got 5 acres and we're putting 9 buildings on it. And that was designed on purpose for the dogs to make sure that their line of sight is best for them, to make sure that they're not agitated, to make sure that the dogs and the cats have the best lifestyle while they are at this Heidi's Village. So it's a unique project, and it'll definitely be challenging because when you're working on 5 acres that's surrounded by 3 adjacent properties and there's only one way in and one way out, you have to figure out how to flow around that site while you're putting up the large 20,000 square foot or 19,000 square foot two-story building that's going to have the veterinarian clinic, the adoption center. And then as you flow around the backside, you have 9 or 8 separate buildings. And all these villages that Heidi's Village, as Heidi's Village, is designed so the dogs have their space, outdoor, indoor, it's clean. You know, we're making sure that it's going to be a tremendous project when it's all said and done, and we're excited and proud to be part of it.
One of the meetings that we had with our architect and our builder, everyone was there, and I kept talking about the materials, how the materials had to be sustainable. They had to be built to last. And so one of the next meetings, I brought my dog in, who immediately walked in and peed on the floor. And I said, this is why we can't have carpet.
There you go. You see?
We let the dog run around. He was sniffing outlets, chewing on tables and chairs. It was a puppy. So, and I think they really realized that everything that's in the facility from our furniture and fixtures needs to be washable. It needs to not be a transmitter of disease after an animal has been near it, on it, in it, et cetera. So we've got a lot of materials in the facility that will be long lasting.
And that'll help maintain the cost. You know, there's operating costs once they open this up, and being a nonprofit, you want to keep those down. So having sustainable products throughout the building is going to make it more efficient for them. Additionally, these buildings were designed to be very efficient. So there's the insulation value of the roof, the walls. These are each individual village has its own mechanical unit. So they're always going to be at a cool 72 degrees. So the way this was designed was to be efficient both immediately and long-term to the benefit of Heidi's Village and the nonprofit.
And there's everything needs to be washed. Everything needs to be washed down. We can't have any rusting. We can't have any standing water. So slopes of the floor and the materials can't be materials that a dog is going to chew or a cat is going to scratch and be a vector for disease.
Or injury.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
We had Scott Hufford from Chase Building Team here a while back, and he spoke a lot about some of the innovation and technology that's making its way into building sustainable and not only environmentally friendly, efficient buildings for humans, but also really healthy spaces for people. And now it sounds like Chase is extending this into the world of animals. Fred, if you could, talk a little bit about some of that unique evolving aspects of construction. The idea that spaces, you know, not only the climate control, the energy use, the air, everything is being optimized in some new ways. Now, this seems a particular expertise of Chase Building Team. You alluded to it in the Heidi's Village project. How does this play out across the board in some of the other projects you're currently working on?
Specifically for nonprofits, you want to build the most efficient buildings. But that carries over to the education in the K-12 world. We've got to make sure when we build these buildings that they're sustainable both long-term with the type of products that we put in them. You mentioned the building mechanical systems, the light fixtures, making sure that you use all LED. You know, our school districts are, you know, limited on the amount of funds that they have annually and or the funds to use to build these new projects and or renovate them. So when we do, or when the school districts do have an opportunity or nonprofits have an opportunity to build something, we have to make sure we capitalize on that and make sure that their operating cost over the long term, that when we're building these 30, 40, 50-year-old buildings, or these buildings that are supposed to last 30, 40, 50 years, are built extremely efficient. You know, there's so many different innovations that are being brought out today with regards to the type of light fixtures, mechanical systems, and everything. So we want to make sure we capitalize on that and make sure that long-term, the end user is getting the best product and we're limiting the amount of money that they need to spend to operate those facilities.
And in addition to that, we're a medical facility. And so our interior designer that we've also collaborated with has designed a lot of hospital medical facilities as well. We have scavenger units that are coming in the facility for oxygen for patients and making sure that goes back out. And so it's very complex and intricate designs.
You know, both in the medical care of humans and also animals, there is an ongoing conversation about the way we've evolved to do things now. The cost of services is higher in this country than in many other places. Questions about whether or not that translates into quality or not are, you know, something that has been seized on in the political realm, et cetera, various points of view on that. Certainly as a consumer with both people and animals in my household, It is prohibitively expensive to get the care that that they all need. I'm wondering, Ellen, from your long experience in the nonprofit world, where do you see this all headed? You addressed how Heidi's Village will have these flexible cost models for people who can't afford certain kinds of services for their animals. What's the future hold, and how do you see this playing out in terms of providing really accessible, high-quality care for animals?
Absolutely. Animals are members of the family. I cannot tell you the number of times that I've talked to friends or neighbors who, oh yeah, we have children too, but this dog is our child right now. And they are a very important part of the family, and they're not gonna scrimp on the medical care for their animals. And I think things have changed in our society. When you used to get a dog or a cat, and you'd open the door, let them out, and when they came back, it was fine. You'd throw a bowl of food out every now and then. And that's not the way people care for their animals these days, nor should they care for their animals like that. And it certainly is important for us to provide medical intervention for animals. I think it's a way that society in general should be judged by the way they care for animals. And we're bound and determined to make that a statement that we live by.
You know, there was an article that I'm going to get the actual numbers wrong, so this is just kind of a general talking point. But it was a mental health study of veterinarians. And what the data showed is that somewhere a shocking majority, something like 60-80%, something that high, of veterinarians are experiencing significant life-impacting stress, depression, and anxiety because they're often being put in situations where they have to make decisions they weren't prepared for in veterinary school. And this was fascinating to me as a human scientist, an anthropologist who's interested in the human beings doing this kind of work. Essentially, what the article showed was that either they were being asked to euthanize an animal that they did not feel there was a medical reason to do that. It was a cost-saving reason, and that was disturbing to them. Or they were being asked to keep an animal alive when that would clearly only prolong its suffering. So there's clearly some things going on in the world that are placing challenges on people. The whole spirit of this project is entirely different than that. And
it is.
And I'm really inspired by what you're doing to create a facility that not only takes the animals but their people into account. Can you speak to some of that commitment and what your goal is for the end user here?
Absolutely. I was at a conference not too long ago, and there was a speaker who was a veterinarian. He was head of one of the veterinary schools in the South, and he said that he was talking about when he was a little kid, his dad was a veterinarian. Dog would come in with a broken leg, he would cast it, and he would, you know, the dog would be good to go. The dog might have a limp every now and then or a permanent limp, but the dog was out there and leading basically a normal life. And what that has turned into is now when a dog has a broken leg, we pin it, we provide extraordinary medical care because we would do that for our children. We would do it for ourselves. And the costs are astronomical. I mean, your average person cannot afford something like that. And so I think the discussion in the veterinary community is what is necessary for the longevity of this animal. If we had the money, absolutely, let's do surgery. Let's make sure this dog doesn't have a scar, doesn't have a limp, doesn't have anything wrong with it. But what is necessary for the longevity of the dog? And that has to be a person's choice. And it is the veterinarian that has to educate the owner and not just push the Ferrari of options, but also what's manageable for the owner.
Fred, there's challenges in the construction industry as well with regard to cost, the cost of labor, the cost of materials, shortages in the workforce. As demand for building projects increases, the supply of skilled labor, for example, is something that must also be on the horizon. Can you speak a little bit to how Chase Building Team is navigating through some of those challenges, overall costs, workforce development, things of that nature?
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now, some of us believe, and this market right now is probably more challenging than 2007. Reason being, 2007 was really busy. A lot of things were being built, but we had a much larger labor force. As the market crashed, we lost a lot of our skilled laborers to other markets, other sectors. They changed their careers. And now, as the industry ramps up and construction ramps up, we're seeing a shortage of skilled laborers. We're seeing costs are going through the roof right now because subcontractors are just overwhelmed with the amount of work they have going on. But additionally, materials there's a shortage of certain materials. So you're seeing longer lead items. So we're in a market that's pretty challenging. So we rely heavy on our relationships. It goes back to that relationships and reputation, not just with owners and architects. We have to carry a great relationship and reputation with our subcontractors because we want to make sure they want to work for us. And when we carry a strong reputation with our industry, they come to us, they work with us, we're able to get the proposals with them. But then it goes to the partnering with owners and architects, because budgets are being constrained by the shortage of labor and skilled laborers and shortage of materials. As all these costs go up, we have to make sure that as the architect and the owner designing something, we're making sure that they're staying within budget. So we help those checkpoints along the way of design to make sure they don't get too far down the road and realize they don't have that money. So it goes to partnering with our owners, architects, and our subcontractors and working closely with all of them to make sure we can navigate through this crazy market right now.
Fred Bueller, Chase Building Team, thank you very much for being here. Where do people learn more about your work and about some of the projects beyond Heidi's Village that we've talked about today?
You can visit us on www.chase.us.
And that's chasse.us, right?
Yep.
Two S's, Chase. Correct. With two S's. Ellen Clark, Vice President of Heidi's Village. What an inspiring project. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can folks learn more?
You can check out our website. It's heidisvillage.org.
Marvelous. Well, both of you, thank you for joining us here in the studio today. I look forward to the future of all of these projects. It's a real bright light in what's happening here in the Valley.
Thanks for having us, and hopefully you can join us at the grand opening of Heidi's Village in April of 2020.
Thank you so much.
Marvelous. For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.